Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
What was your happiest moment of the month when Shaq ran down that loose ball?
Yeah, it was a great play. Yeah, I love those effort plays, man.
Let's talk some NBA with Mark Deeks, Sky Sports NBA, ShamSports.com. You should be following him at Mark Deeks NBA on Twitter. He joins the Bernstein and McKnight Show on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, home of F-150s for $229 per month. Deeks, how's it going, man?
Good afternoon, gentlemen, or good morning, whichever you'd rather. All is well. How are you doing?
Well, a little dismayed at the Bulls' victory over the Phoenix Suns in Phoenix. I think in putting Cristiano Felicio out there, in making sure that maybe there was a little bit of resting going on, they still could not help themselves and ended up winning their 20th game.
Counterpoint, you don't want to be as bad as the Suns, otherwise your rebuild will probably never end. So try to think of it that way. They're good enough to be near the top of the lottery, but not bad enough that they can't beat Phoenix. So don't worry. It's not too bad.
I guess we've been going back and forth the last couple of weeks, Mark, about the defensive effort or lack thereof that the Bulls have been able to put in. As the offense has gone up, Larry Markkanen's slump aside, the defensive anything, cohesion, effort, talent, scheme, it's just not been there. And that's supposed to be Boylan's thing. I wonder where you think they're at in terms of having talent that can get it done versus just not being interested in the scheme that's being run.
It's probably hard to stay motivated when when you are playing games such as that against the Suns, where you know that your front office does have an eye to you. They never outright say it, but like you say, if you run Cristiano Felicio, having benched him for pretty much the entire season in a game against a team with 17, whichever it is, wins, everyone knows what's going on there. There's not a great incentive for the team to win. Thus, subconsciously perhaps, it's going to be difficult for players to buy in. It's not that they're not professional, but we don't, with respect, gentlemen, we don't always produce our best at work every day. No one does. That is what it means to be human. If you are biding time, as the Bulls are, they're playing out the last dozen games or whatever it is of the schedule with a view to the future, not much to the present. How motivated can the players be? You can say they're playing for their jobs. Yes, they're playing to impress the coach and may stick around the front office. You definitely will. They're playing for the future up to a point. But what are they going to do in the next 12 games than against the previous 70? It's probably hard to stay motivated. That's not an excuse, but I'd count on that probably is a reason.
Do you think the Denver Nuggets are worthy of attention as we get closer to the playoffs, as meriting status as a genuine contender?
Yes, they're a forward contender in the sense that they, as great as Nikola Jokic is, he's not the man to lead you every night, and even though he's a tremendous point center, someone needs to get him the ball. The Nuggets have been as good as they are because they've been able to sustain lengthy injuries to Will Barton and Gary Harris and even Paul Millsap, three of their five starters due to their tremendous depth. But now those players have been brought back, they're not fitting all that well. Murray hasn't made a leap. Harris is a fraction of his former self due to injury. Will Barton is trying to be Kobe out there, which was fun and useful last year, but he's going too far with it this year. So they're a fraud contender. But they're a legitimate one. They're tied with the Golden State Warriors. They are very potent and much improved defensively. They have depth, which is vital. Yes, rotations will shorten, but when we compare their depth to, for example, the Philadelphia 76ers, you don't have reliable presences off the bench. The Nuggets do. They have Monte Morris, who is prone. They have Malik Beasley. He's become one of the best pure shooters in the league. They are a legitimate contender. Of course, they are significantly untested. They didn't make the playoffs last year despite going 46-36. They, in fact, lost their last game of the season against the Minnesota Timberwolves in a playing game. So they're not battle-tested in that respect. But no one's battle-tested the first time. That's what battle-tested means. So the fact that they haven't done this before does not mean they're not a legitimate contender now. They're certainly not favourites. The fact that they are tied for the top seed in the Western Conference does not mean they have the greatest or equal greatest chance of getting out of it, but they do genuinely have one.
Let's talk about the team on the top of the Eastern Conference. The Bucks sit fairly comfortably on top of things. We all talked after the deadline, and I believe you're pretty happy with the moves the Bucks were able to make. Have those moves performed and returned in a way that you expected for Milwaukee?
Somewhat. When we consider that the Washington Wizards used 4 second-round picks just to dodge the luxury tax, and the Bucks used 4 to bring in Nikola Mirotic, it's easy to see why they'd be happy at the deadline. Unfortunately, they seem to have fallen a little bit into the trap that everyone who coaches Mirotic does, which is hoping, if not necessarily expecting, to be able to play in a small forward. They can't. They're going to need to play Mirotic at power forward, which even though they've got Ersan Ilyasova and DJ Wilson already, the only position that's really going to suit him going forward. They've had some problems defensively a little bit in trying to play Mirotić at the 3 spot. That said, we're talking about the best defense in the NBA here. We're talking about a team that executes its schemes very precisely and very deliberately. They're deliberately dropping back with Brooke Lopez. They're allowing teams to pull up from 2-point range, even if those shots are relatively open. They know what they're doing, and they do it very well. They have the NBA's best record because they've been the NBA's best team. Again, they are not battle-tested, but we must not over-worry about that as something to count against them, because no one's battle-tested the first time. And not being battle-tested doesn't mean you're not capable. And if anything, there could be an argument made that being the first time they've ever been in a position anything like this will help them. They're not burdened by previous memory of failure. They're extremely good. Giannis is ridiculous. The complementary pieces around them are very good. Malcolm Brogdon's injury is a deep problem. Mm-hmm. If he's not back in time, can't negate that. Tony Snell is not the same. That said, whilst they don't have an optimum backup for Malcolm Brogdon, they do have so much else in the rest of their starting four and key bench contributors like Mirotić that they're not going to fall away from that. If you're going to have a quote-unquote serious injury to an important player, at least he's their fifth starter.
Where does the NCAA tournament fit in your basketball world? What does it mean regarding the way you're looking at future pros or the way you look at the game? Does it have a place, or is that sort of a side dish?
It helps a bit in the sense that you do get to see who can step up. And more than anything, it's a great theater. I love that. It's my favorite aspect of American sports. And to have a straight knockout like that is a beautiful thing. The upset potential is tremendous. In terms of evaluating a prospect's ability, it's marginally impactful, but you've got a whole total body of work prior to that on which to evaluate potential. And what we should remember is that we're evaluating potential rather than reality. What I will say, which is why I say it this time every year, is to those who think college basketball is much better than NBA basketball because they try harder, they don't try harder, they just make it look harder because they're not as good. So I just want to preemptively strike against that narrative, which is going to come out over the course of the next week. The NCAA tournament is brilliant. College basketball, for all its structural flaws, is a great fun product. It's not better than the NBA necessarily.
The Clippers are going to make the playoffs, and with their actions at the deadline, I think you probably expected that they didn't think that was going to happen. Where are they at in terms of their prospects in the playoffs are bad if they face the Warriors, but heading forward here, they're pretty damned interesting.
Especially with Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
They really are. They really are. They've got the potential to be the next great super team. They've got some excellent core players around them to build around, plenty of assets after the deals they made. Even the ancillary benefit of the Tobias Harris trade was being able to put Danilo Gallinari at power forward, a position he should play hereafter, much like we just talked about with Mirotić. They were able to get Ivica Zubac for, frankly, nothing. I mean, they had a tremendous deadline. They already were quite replete with draft assets and financial flexibility with some good young players. It's really promising. The narrative for a generation about it being the Clippers and about not being a draw, I don't think that matters now. Because even those players that they do have that aren't expiring, like Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams, that's a combined $14 million for two, frankly, excellent players. They've really positioned themselves really, really, really well. They already had, but the trade deadline has only made it better because they offered what Harris was worth. He rejected it, and they still were able to get Landry Shamet and future assets for that player. They've done extremely well. The fact that they've been able to trade their best player and still make the playoffs, if anything, an improved version of what they were prior, speaks to an excellent year.
Talking with Mark Deeks of Sky Sports NBA and ChamSports.com on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. Last night, Dirk Nowitzki became the sixth leading scorer in NBA history, passing Wilt Chamberlain. And when you look at the impact that he's had and what he's meant as a European import, the foreign players in the NBA of their era that probably heralded these rapid changes to the game, I would argue, are Nowitzki and Manu Ginobili for how they played, what they represented, how they changed definitions positionally. What is top of mind for you in the context of Dirk Nowitzki in basketball history?
Well, I'm not old enough to remember this guy, but Petrovic as well was a pioneer in that respect. Everyone says he was certainly an excellent player. We do continue to push back these boundaries because of players such as Dirk, and we must remember how fierce and unique what he was. I say was, not because he's changed, but because the league's orthodoxy has caught up around him. But the days when he could run, and he could run well for a seven-footer, also dropped that unblockable fadeaway and put up, in his early days, quite a large proliferation of three-point shots. This was an era of the two posts, of however everyone 7 foot must take touches in the post. That was the orthodoxy, that was the groupthink, that was the norm, that was the rules, basically. The fact that we had someone who was so good as to indisputably counteract that, paired with a coach like Nelson, who was liberated enough to employ him in that way, that is what has helped change the game. Dirk has helped change the game. I'm glad to see that as this season has gone on, he's been able to get back a little bit, because he did look like an old man at the start of the year, but he's doing a little bit better later on, which is nice. I do hope there is one more left in him, as long as he can still go up and down the court. As for his legacy and how that's changed the perspective of European players, well, I can't say we're completely done in this respect when Luka Doncic is still being picked third overall. There was nothing more that Doncic could have done. There's literally nothing more, gentlemen, that Doncic could have done, apart from, you know, be the best player on the EuroLeague title winner, be the best player on the EuroBasket winner. All right, if he wasn't, he was close enough, was. He was leading games, closing games, dropping these Harden-like setbacks, and everyone focused exclusively on a three-point percentage and his lack of separation speed. There's a European bias there. Dirk has helped to shift that. He's helped bring along players like Kristaps Porzingis indirectly, because now it's fine for a 7 foot three player to be shooting jump shots. This isn't Bruno Sundov anymore. We're talking about a different era.
Bruno Sundov.
Oh, it's good. I've got the reference.
Don't worry. I've
got the good one. But we're still not there, because there is still a European bias against Luka Doncic. There is still a... There's nothing more he could have done, and yet he didn't do enough to go first or even second in the draft. So thank you, Dirk, for everything, for all the doors you opened. Not quite there.
All right, before we let you go, you watch Zion Williamson play, and you see what?
My gut answer is one born out of my own paranoia. He's an absolutely transcendent, phenomenal player, an absolute bully that will never leave him. His ability to score, produce, and finish over everybody, yeah, that's... The talent level he's playing against in the NCAA is not what it will be in the NBA, but these things, he's not going to struggle to translate his skill and size. My paranoia comes from the size and whether that will be sustainable. That's an awful lot of weight to repeatedly put on a pair of knees. At the same time, you get him with an NBA strength and conditioning coach, they're going to love that pairing. So what I see is an absolute clear-cut number one. I don't think number two is even close. I see an NBA all-star and potential superstar. I hope they're able to nurture that and sustain his career for as long as possible, especially given the way he plays. But he's so young, his skills... I mean, if you remember Blake Griffin back in the day, he was an absolute freight train, yet he's developed his skills sufficiently in his handle and shooting to no longer have to play in that way and sustain his career. There's every reason to believe Zion could be the same, considering how quickly he's developed. I see a superstar.
There you have it. Mark Deeks, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, Jim. Have a good day.
That is Mark Deeks, Sky Sports NBA.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.